Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for the next in our expectations series. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Roger Rosengarten and Aeneas Peebles. Joining me to do that is Jason Wolbert. Jason, how you doing?
Hey, man. Excited for the season coming up. A lot of changes, a lot of unknown, and we've got an entire season of the summer to speculate on it. So the more as we go along with it, the better idea that we're going to have on how the new team is going to take shape.
Yep. Lots of things still to be determined about this team. The offensive line is a big one with a new offensive line coach, a lot of new players, particularly on the interior. But one of the players we're going to talk about right around has been one of the steadier players on the Ravens line, certainly now for a couple of years. And that's Roger Rosengarten. Entering year three, won't be 24 until June still. So one of the younger players from that draft class still. You know, it's funny, looking back on that class, he was the 62nd overall pick out of Washington. And he has really outplayed almost every offensive tackle who's drafted ahead of him. The major exception is Joe Alt, who is a superstar, but who was drafted number five overall. But all the other guys, and we're going to go through them in just a moment, he's really outplayed pretty significantly in their 2 years in the league so far.
Yes, he was someone who was a late riser among the national media heads and such like that. And for armchair draft picks such as ourselves, that's we don't have the information that we don't have is typically the interview information and what the teams can dig up. So when you see something like that, when you see a player be a fast riser late, they were probably higher on teams' boards earlier on, and then the media catches up to it, and then the fans catch up to it after that. But in this case, looked like it was accurate. Rosengarten was selected with 62nd. The 62nd overall pick. So, yeah.
The guys drafted ahead of him were Alt at number five, who is a legitimate star at this point. Missed a lot of last year, but he's played extremely well when he's been on the field over his 2 years. Fashanu was then drafted, and I don't have his number here. Might have been 14. He's been not quite as good as Rosengarten, not too much worse, but he's 6 months younger. So there's a player who certainly could be better over the full length of time. It was the year of the Fs, if you'll remember. Fuaga has been not as good. He's a couple of months older. Amarius Mims was drafted at number 18. Not as good a player certainly so far, but he's 4 months younger. It seems like Mims is kind of hitting his stride. So it does look like Mims might end up being a better player than Rosengarten. We'll see how that actually plays out. Obviously, him being with a division rival, we certainly hope it doesn't end up that way. Then the Steelers got Fautanu at number 20. Not as good a player, 20 months older also than Rosengarten, and still 42 picks ahead of him. Then it was a lot of talk in the 20s about the Ravens potentially moving up, grabbing a player when they were drafting, I think, 28. And then they ended up taking, and now I'm forgetting, 2 years ago with the 28th pick they took.
The 28th pick was Kansas City. And they took Xavier Worthy with that selection. The Ravens Nate Wiggins two picks later.
Right, of course. Wiggins at 30. That's right. But the Guyton was taken at 29 by the Cowboys. And he was a guy that was the left tackles were in tremendous abundance to start that draft. And they started coming off the board relatively quickly. Honestly, the Joe Alt pick was where the trouble began, because the Ravens had it wasn't a sure thing that the Chargers were going to take a left tackle, and they could have traded the pick. Certainly somebody else could have taken it, but it looked like the Chargers might take a different position. They already had Rashawn Slater, and they didn't. They ended up taking all, and that kind of put the entire league one left tackle in deficit in the draft. And then the remainder of the guys got taken pretty quickly. The Ravens, frankly, ought to be very happy they didn't get Guyton now, who's the same age as Roger Rosengarten, was selected at 29 by the Cowboys. He's one of the worst tackles in the entire league. So, we're seeing that. And honestly, I think we feel very, very fortunate that that didn't occur.
That was something that, to my recollection, Guyton was not high on their board particularly. neither was the there was another there was another offensive tackle that was taken later, Kingsley Suamataia.
Yeah, Suamataia. Yeah,
who there was a lot of debate over which offensive tackle the Ravens were ultimately going to go with, and I remember at the time, all of these offensive tackles are being taken, and we were wondering if they were going to get any of them that were towards the top of the draft. And then we ended up with the two. We ended up with Rosengarten and Suamataia.
And we're still available at 62, yes.
Right. And the Ravens made the right selection.
To say the least. And I missed one. Was Latham also was taken at number 7. I missed that one. And I'm trying to see how he's played in his 2 years in the league for Tennessee.
Is he even at tackle still?
He's listed there.
Okay.
So I haven't seen on PFF where he is, but he started 30 games in 2 years with Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I've got to see where he's playing now. But anyway, let's continue on. Then there's Chris Paul was taken at number 55. Not as good a player, 19 months older, and still 7 picks in front. Then Blake Fisher was still taken out of Notre Dame. And again, not as good a player, 9 months younger than Rosengarten. So the Ravens kind of had other teams walk through the minefield ahead of them and ended up taking some picks that they probably would rather have had Rosengarten instead.
Yeah. Although it's worth noting that I think Rosengarten, at least my opinion at the time when he was drafted, was that he was scheme specific, a zone blocker, not much of a gap scheme power guy. So he would not have fit particularly with every team that might have drafted him.
Yeah, that's one thing that I hear a fair amount. And one thing I always tell people is teams run gap, they run power, they do both. Okay. And it can be massively overrated how important it is to have a specific scheme player. Where I think there's a bigger problem is in college with extremely well-coached offensive lines that are very well polished. And the team that's known for that above all others, in my opinion, is Iowa. Mm-hmm. They work together in such a way, and they're coached in such a way that they work very well together, and they don't necessarily end up playing real well with other linemen across the league. Now, we've had Marshall Yanda and Tyler Linderbaum here that have been no problem, but there's been plenty of others around the league who haven't turned out nearly as well, and it doesn't always work out that way. I think that's actually the bigger risk. I think the scheme specificity thing is generally pretty damn overrated. that you can't put the elephants on parade with a certain type of a little bit slower footed guard or center. I'm not buying that as much. And you know, one great example on the Ravens of a guy who adapted to the mobility requirements when that was the biggest knock on him coming out of school is Bradley Bozeman. And he played a lot better with the Ravens than he did elsewhere. But, you know, a guy who certainly learned how to pull and pull very frequently with the Ravens. Mm-hmm. I think that oftentimes it's quite overstated. I'm not saying that Daniel Falele was a good zone blocker, but I would say that, that the requirement to be scheme specific is usually I would not have it ever be the 10-point consideration in whether or not I take an offensive lineman.
Well, that's a good point. And that dovetails into what the Ravens did in the draft this year with Ioane.
Yeah.
He's going to be asked to do both. And we have even more categories now, right, than just zone or gap. We have duo, we have other devices among offensive line scheme blocking. So ultimately, you're right. You just want a good offensive lineman.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, very, very happy with Ioane. And he'll be a guy who, if when we're talking combination blocks, I think that's what you're saying when you say duo, that mm-hmm. he'll be a a spectacularly valuable guy there, whether he is the trailing player or the climbing player. It's one of the things that I've looked at, and I said, you know, decisiveness moving to level two is something he's been a little bit short on, and some of his, he's downgraded a little bit by groups like PFF as a run blocker. I think a lot of that is fixable, and I don't think it's all foot speed related. I think some of it is just decisiveness. And I think I hearing him talk at the podium, he's not a like a hyper shy guy like Falele, who is afraid to kind of make a mistake even when he spoke. He's a very well adjusted, you know, intelligent sounding guy at the podium, and I think he's going to pick up offensive line play at the higher level very quickly and do well. So everything initial thoughts myself are that it's going to really work out with him.
Well, pursuant to Rosengarten, I was interested in selecting Rosengarten for one of our two players tonight because he is the guy that's the incumbent here. The yep. Ravens are going to have three, most likely, new interior offensive linemen. Rosengarten becomes extremely important. Obviously, Stanley as well. Stanley will be fine so long as he stays healthy. We know this. He's a rock over there on the left-hand side. Rosengarten hasn't been as consistent. He had some bad games last season, and the question is how much of it was him, how much of it was the player next to him, how much of it was what was asked of him, because he's also had some very good games.
Yep. That's certainly true. We can talk about his scoring in just a moment. I want to say I think the biggest difference in watching him between 24 and 25 was the amount of help he was given. And in 24 in particular, they gave him a ton of help on that right side. And he scored quite well that season by my system, about 5 points higher than he did in 25 when he was still good. And the difference is largely, in my opinion, a matter of how much help he had on chip blocks and some of the other pass blocking situations. He's not immune to getting beaten by speed. That can certainly happen in his case, and it did a fair amount. And he's not immune to getting beaten, particularly to his outside shoulder in other ways too, whether that means speed to power, that rip move or whatever it might be. But the various speed techniques, certainly have had some effectiveness against him. He has counters he uses. He tries to get people south of the pocket with some 12-6 blocking. His length is not entirely ideal for that. But qualitatively, I thought he had quite a good year in 25 still, and did some things as a run blocker that we'll get into that I think were better than he'd done in 24, despite some of the positions he was put in. Now I have his grades here for the year. I'm going to put that up here so we can share them. And I'm sorry, folks at home, you'll have to just imagine them here. But let me see if I can do that here and make them large enough so we can. Let's see. How's that? Can you see that okay?
Perfectly fine. I can see the big fat F on week one.
Yes. It's a tough game for him against the Bills. He had a false start penalty, a couple of pressures allowed. He missed six blocks. And it was a game where the Ravens only played 50 offensive snaps. You see, look at those first 5 weeks. The offensive snaps played for the Baltimore Ravens were just pathetic during that period. 50, 50, 54, 53, and 40 in those first 5 weeks.
That is a result of the secondary breaking down and the opposing offense being able to do pretty much whatever they wanted. That hurt the Ravens offense.
Yeah, they moved the field down the field very quickly. And even then, Rosengarten played okay for those first 5 weeks. He had a couple of his better games of the year are in that group against Cleveland and Kansas City, and a good game versus Houston when certainly no one else was playing pretty well that day. Was playing particularly well anyway. So, but that wasn't where his season really took off. After he had a poor game against the LA Rams in week six, he really was fantastic down the stretch. The rest of the way, and I'll read off his grades real quickly: A minus, A, C, D, B, C plus, B, 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 and B minus in the last 5 weeks there. So finished extremely strong and, had a solid overall rating, whether you like my grade, which would be put him right on about the C plus, B minus border for the whole season. And remember, I don't grade on a curve. There's other systems that, you know, they do that, and everybody's an A, a B, or a C because they don't want to give a D or an F to anyone. I'm not like that at all. You know, if you're below the league average, you're probably going to be a C minus or a D plus player at your position. I think he was rated 22 out of the 28. Sorry, not true. I think it's 28 out of 62 tackles who played half the snaps on PFF, if I recall correctly. And that's from a pass blocking standpoint.
And that's a good number. And if you are grading on that particular scale, then getting a B is a very good number. One thing I've noticed is penalties really normally have an effect on your grades, but I see not one but two games during this season where he committed three penalties and you still gave him a pretty good grade.
That's three penalty points. And let me explain that to you on that. So a 5-yard penalty can be worth either 2 or 3 points. It's worth 2 points for the 5 yards as one additional point if the penalty is declinable. Okay, so he had all 5-yard penalties all year. Nothing, no holding or worse. So very good from that perspective. He did have two illegal formation penalties, one in week 4, and another in week 14 was ascribed to the wrong player. So you won't see it on the NFL tallies for it, but it was his. And then in week 13, he had a false start with he shared with another player, and that's why he's got a 1-point penalty there.
Okay.
So his total for, I mean, it's not nothing, but it was 13 points. He lost on 953 snaps. So if we divide that out, it's a, you know, less than 0.015 of his total points lost, which is about 20.26 per play, was due to penalties. So it's actually a very small percentage of his deductions were due to penalties.
And I can see how the sack numbers practically disappeared after the bye as well.
Yeah, good. I mean, that's a good point. He only had after the bye, let's see. He had a third, and a half sacks after the bye. So he gave up two full sacks against the LA Rams. That was a very tough game for him. And in that first 6 weeks, he had some contribution to a sack in 5 of the 6 games. So that wasn't good. But he had a good year. I thought it played well from a pressures allowed standpoint, and particularly when you consider the severity of the pressures allowed in the second half. One thing you will see, and this is where he loses a lot of points. He lost 26 points from a 100-point base. About 10 points of that came on missed blocks. So 95 out of 953 he lost on those. That is a normal for a tackle to be a little bit higher, but he's probably a little bit higher than most tackles. Ronnie Stanley on the other side is quite the athlete. He can move along into level 2. And level 3, and he'll be a very hard worker to try and find work out there. And frankly, it was great to see Ronnie moving really well again this last year and doing some of that again, because he had problems with it, with the ankle, doing it as well. But Rosengarten, that's definitely a shortcoming of his, is that he doesn't do it as well and picks up some additional missed blocks from that. So that's a fairly significant component. If the play has gone left in general, Rosengarten probably is not going to make too much of a blocking contribution on the play.
Well, one thing I'm extremely interested, probably among the top things that I'm interested in seeing this season with the Ravens coming up, is the new offensive line coach, Ledford, coming in. And I want to see how he's going to affect the performance of people that we have seen before. The new people coming in, there's no baseline, right?
Right.
But even somebody like John Simpson over at left guard, he's been with the Ravens before. Now he's back. I'm very curious to see the impact of the new offensive line coach, because I happen to think, my opinion is that is one of the biggest upgrades that the Ravens have made this offseason, but it's not going to be confirmed until we start seeing it.
I think everybody is banking on that being the case. There's an enormous amount of pressure on Ledford specifically to deliver. There's so many ways in which he's threaded through this team in terms of this, but you know, he was really on the Ioane draft pick and was the guy who wanted him probably more than I'm sure the Ravens wanted him in general, but the Ravens reportedly were considering the same three people that we were considering on the draft show. And that was Bain, Sadiq, and Ioane. And they went with Ioane, and I think it ended up being the pick that made a lot of sense given the run on offensive linemen that occurred afterwards. Sadiq was a probably, to me, was a more intriguing pick in terms of value, because I think they could have kept him for the 10 years as the Ravens, given the fifth year option and franchise tags. But Ioane, just in terms of the value there and the needed offensive line they had, was a really tough guy to pass on. And I think it worked out well that they didn't. I think they'll get a lot of value out of him. My main fear is that they're either going to have a player who sets the new guard market at 25, 28 million a year, whatever it is, in 4 years. Maybe, that's in today's cap dollars. Mm-hmm. Or, they're going to have a good but not great player that they basically have to let walk because he doesn't quite meet the level required to give a fifth year option to at guard. And then there's not the same incentives to get him signed. So the Ravens aren't in the same extraordinarily positive position they would have been if they'd gotten that level of performance out of a Kenyan Sadiq, because I think Sadiq would then be very easy to re-sign. And as soon as you have the ability, the power to make that signing, then you have tremendous additional lubricants to make a long-term signing and put that in place. So usually those deals get done pretty quickly if the player doesn't have a lot of optionality to their free agency that they can hold over the team's head.
Well, that, fortunately, we're not going to have to deal with that for a couple of years. In Rosengarten's case, the Ravens are going to have to make the decision soon if they want to keep him or let him walk.
Exactly. True. And kind of the same situation, isn't it? A good but not great player, probably, they really want to keep. But after 3 years, they're probably going to have to make the decision, aren't they?
Yeah. Personally, I really don't want to see him go after seeing Linderbaum walk. Although it's unfortunate. Sometimes you can kind of see it coming, and that was the case with Linderbaum. But Rosengarten, I know that there are other options potentially at right tackle moving forward. But there are only so many functional NFL offensive tackles out there. And if you have them, it's just not a good idea to start over. So this is a huge season coming up for Roger Rosengarten.
Yeah, lots on the line for him to be sure. This is a year where he was never challenged for playing time. And we're not far removed from when he started the season in rotation with Patrick McCary in 24. Mm-hmm. And had to wait until McCary moved to left guard to take over that right tackle spot and make it his.
Do you think he is going to be the entrenched, like, long-term right tackle? Are they going to? Yeah, there's going to be no thought about shifting him over to the left side.
There will be thought, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think Carson Vinson is such a perfect physical fit for the left tackle position. I think he stays there. It makes all kinds of sense. I mean, he's a vertical build, extremely good feet, long arms. He's everything you'd want for a left tackle. Rosengarten's a little short on arm length, not terribly, at 33 and a half inches. He could certainly play left tackle with that kind of arm length. But I don't think he has the feet. I don't think he's demonstrated that. And I think it just makes completely more sense to keep him exactly where he is, where he's played well, and try and get more value out of him there.
I completely agree. I would keep him at right tackle. I hope that they re-sign him. I know that there may be a little bit of an overpay, but that's the price of doing business. And Vinson, that'll be for another night, but I'm very excited to see what improvements he had. I think he's going to be the left tackle of the future.
Yeah. We just recorded the Carson Vinson and Tez Walker, so it should be out the day before this airs, or possibly 2 days before, depending on how, like, a Camp Notes comes out relative to this. And I'd encourage people to go back to that, because the thing about Vinson is he hardly played at all. And yet he had about as good a season as you can have as a blocked developmental offensive tackle. You know, you know, the last thing you want to do is see the guy on the field. And yet he played about as many preseason snaps as you could possibly get. And we saw development even during that preseason and over the summer when he came in very, very raw into the first rookie camps and OTAs. And then we saw a player who not only did he get activated towards the end of the year, but he took that job from a healthy healthy Joe Noteboom, which is very exciting. It's extremely exciting that he's able to beat out, you know, a 7-year veteran or whatever Noteboom was take his job. So
and perform better.
He barely played when he was out there, but he definitely performed better in terms of the very minimal snaps relative to Noteboom, who was very much below the line in his play, mostly in the early season.
So that would be our hope, you know, moving forward. We'll have Carson Vinson on the left side, Roger Rosengarten on the right side, and Iwane dominating in the middle. And so I suppose that's best case scenario for us. Yeah,
absolutely. And they need to figure out who that center is. They've got a lot of below the line options that people are not very excited about, and I understand why. I just hope one of them can come through. And I was talking about the many threads, how Ledford is running through the organization. I mean, he brought Jovan Gwynn with him. It wouldn't shock me if Jovan Gwynn ends up getting serious consideration at center, given his connection. He only played 11 snaps in I think 3 seasons in the NFL. So it's not like he's done much. I think he's a second year player based on the fact that he hasn't been on the 53-man roster until last year. But he's a guy that Ledford obviously really likes, and maybe he's a guy who jumps into that competition along with Bullock and Pinter and some vet they might bring in still.
You have to imagine that. I mean, he's Ledford's guy, so he's going to have that advantage with him. That's another discussion, right? But how does Roger Rosengarten take the next step, would you say?
Yeah, that's a good question in terms of what can he really do better. I think most of it is about solidifying the gains he's got and getting very small incremental gains while he's still young in a number of areas. Maybe there's some additional strength that's not quite there yet at age 24. Maybe there's a little bit of technique and hand placement that he can pick up from Ledford that will be at a higher level and allow him to be better with the first contact situations, with the hand fighting that goes in with some of the opposing offensive linemen. He looked better between year one and year two in a number of ways, including, you know, dealing without help, including getting to level two. I thought, you know, his combination blocks, his down blocking was oftentimes really thunderous, and his ability to get into level two, I thought, was pretty good, even though a lot of the backside of run plays, like I mentioned, he had a hard time making contributions on. So it'd be hard for me to say exactly where he's going to get a lot better, but something tells me, based on his age and the quality of play between 24 and 25, that we're not done seeing growth from Roger Rosengarten.
That's good to hear. So I would say a good season from Roger Rosengarten would be something akin to repeating what he did last year. Would you agree with that?
Sure. I mean, this is go through your good season as you'd see it. I don't have to agree with every point. I'm going to have my own, and we want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Well, a good season baseline would be A, stay healthy. That's the key for everybody, right? Stay healthy. Unfortunately, a lot of that is not in the player's control. But the attrition is a major part of this game, which is why you need to have depth no matter what team you are, as well as why there's a correlation between who the healthy teams are by the end of the season and who goes deep in the playoffs and wins the Super Bowl. So that's just a cross your fingers kind of deal, right? But Rosengarten has a history of playing in most of the games, so you're not expecting him to go down. He doesn't have like an injury history of some of the other people on the team. I would want him to continue his level of play from last season after the bye. I would say I would like him to quickly get comfortable with Ioane next to him. I think that he will. I think that he's going to enjoy quite a bit having someone who's going to be one of the top guards in the league. Again, cross fingers. To perform at that level, knowing that the Ravens are most likely not going to carry a fullback, and they are going to put a lot of tight ends in receiving positions and receiving routes, with presuming Declan Doyle is going to follow suit with Ben Johnson and his offense over in Chicago. I think that's actually going to be somewhat similar to last season, where he got less help than in his rookie year. And tight ends are going to be expected to run routes and catch passes and not necessarily help him with chips as much. So steady as it is for me would be a good season from him.
All right, fair enough. A good season, and I'll remind people, I use a good season, I take a 60th percentile of what I believe is a reasonable range of outcomes, and a great season, 80th percentile. So for good season for me, I'd say continues improvement in the quality of play given his health and circumstances. So this was a better year from him in a lot of ways, and he scored lower despite it because of the, I think largely because of the reduced help. Some people would say because Fa'alele was next to him, maybe that had a component. He should really be able to overcome that in terms of his scoring on the individual blocks, but I can understand why some people say it. Develops chemistry with Ioane to handle stunts and twists, to deliver punishing combination results. Anchor and feet continue to hold up at a level no worse than 25, and he settles in as a high-quality right tackle who moves to approximately the 75th percentile in the league. And right now I'd say he's in about the 60th to 65th percentile. Nothing wrong with that. Hey, a second-year tackle who can play at that level, you do really well to start from that spot. And we've seen that with Ravens offensive linemen, that they show significant improvement year over year during those first 4 years. And a lot of them really hit their stride in year four, like Ben Powers, say, or like Rick Wagner did. Going way back, Tony Pachos did.
Yeah, I was thinking about Pachos.
He did earn a big contract. There you go. And then I think that the other thing that will come up if he hits these thresholds is that the Ravens discuss extension after 2026. Don't think it'll happen during the season. I think they will discuss it. I'm not 100% sure it'll happen. There is no other alternative for the Ravens to hit on. So meaning that they can extend him after 2026, but they can't give him a 50-year option. They could potentially franchise tag him prior to the 27 season if they wait 28 season after he plays out his. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Final year in 27. So that could be a possible outcome for him. I think it's unlikely in his case that he would make left tackle money as a right tackle, but it's conceivable. Anyway, that's what I would put in there for a good season for him.
Okay. That is interesting. He would be competing against the other members of the draft class if they are not, you know, signed and they're still on the team in terms of that extension. And yep. If he has another good season, then that's going to be a discussion. He's going to be favored over Adisa Isaac, TJ Tampa, nope. Tez Walker, nope.
Wiggins.
Wiggins is the guy, but he has the fifth-year option.
Yep, that's true.
Potential. So he would potentially be competing against the previous year's.
Well, let me throw the big name out there, and that's Flowers. Lamar Jackson.
Oh, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
So. Well, yeah, that would throw the monkey wrench into everything. I guess we can't talk about anybody else until that resolved.
That's certainly true. What I want to say, I thought the lane you were going down is that if he hit free agency, he'd be in the same pool with all these other fourth year tackles that kind of underperformed their draft status, but might be at a better point at that point. Amarius Mims or Fatano, Fashano, Fuaga, any of those guys. And they'd all be competing for money in that free agency pool, potentially. The ones who don't get signed. So it won't be a Linderbaum situation where he's the only gas station in sight for a lot of teams.
Yes. Counterintuitively, you don't want Rosengarten to be the best of the bunch.
That's true.
In that case, in that specific case, because then the Ravens will be left with having to get one of the other ones.
Hopefully they sign him early. Yeah.
Yes, I would say a great season from him would be that he shows next to Ioane. Side note, Falele was not good, right? But people turned that season of his into a meme.
Yes.
To the point where like every single thing was on him. Well, no, some of that was on Rosengarten. Some of those missed blocks were on him and had nothing to do with Falele. So if he cleans that up, that's the major issue, right? If he cleans that up and continues with his very good sack numbers, good penalty numbers, and just becomes a top five right tackle in the NFL, I think he's capable of doing that, then that would just kind of make it a no-doubter that the Ravens should extend him and he would become a long-term fixture with the team and somebody that you can look back and say, this was a really, really good Raven.
Yeah. I mean, there's a good chance if he signs another contract here that he ends up in the Ravens Ring of Honor. That's how much of a, you know, it's an important position. It's a team that if you play 8 to 9 years for, you generally are going to end up being in the Ring of Honor based on the standards that they set for a lot of this. And, Hamilton pretty much is already in the Ring of Honor based on the fact that he signed his second contract with the team. And I think Rosengarten would have a very good chance if he did it. Great season for me. I'll just read it. Develops the top into a top quartile pass blocking right tackle in 2026. Mm-hmm. Not even requiring anything specific in terms of run blocking, other than to say it takes a step forward as he learns the Ravens dance steps well enough to run counters effectively. Anchor is solid for an NFL right tackle. He's not a fish out of water when matched up against his divisional rivals. Certainly some great pass rushers on that side in the division. He further develops synergy with Ioane and the Ravens pass blocking tight ends on his side. No drop off from the loss of Patrick Ricard. I thought it was excellent. You mentioned that first in the first one. Play provides hope he can move to left tackle. There's something we haven't really seen evidence of, but I'd love for his play to be good enough that they could entertain that thought, because that would maximize the flexibility that they have entering 2027. It doesn't have to be Stanley or Vinson only if we learn something bad about Stanley's health or Vinson's quality of play. And then I think if he has this great season, he's certainly extended after the 26th season. It wouldn't be a matter of just exploring it or talking about it. I mean, I think they'd get it done if he moved up that far. I think they'd realize how central this is to keeping Lamar happy and healthy, to having Rosengarten there.
Agreed. Very good.
All right. Outstanding. Let's move on. Talk about Aeneas Peebles then, because a guy who I think most of us had a lot of hope for. Jason, I'm forgetting you were on extensively for day three this last year, which, by the way, really appreciated. Outstanding commentary from you on the draft show. I don't remember if the previous year you were on for as long on day three, but we had a lot. We were struggling to get to the finish line. The Ravens hadn't taken a defensive tackle or defensive lineman the entire draft, and they finally took Aeneas Peebles in round six at pick number 210.
That's right. And that's why this is a good match with Rosengarten, because these are both incumbents, and these are both players that can take the next step. There is still growth there. Peebles is a lot farther behind in the pecking order than Rosengarten is right now, but he can still carve a role on the team. As a rookie, that wasn't really the case. He had a hard time getting playing time on the field. And he is in a roster crunch. That's the reality of the situation. He's competing against Benny. And you have to wonder if the signing of Calais Campbell will affect that. You have to wonder how many nose tackles the team is actually going to carry, and how that's going to affect the numbers crunch on the three techs and five techs that they may expect to have.
Let's put a pin in that. We'll come back to it in terms of the roster crunch, because I really think it is a central question that you're hitting on with Aeneas. And talk about his season and a little bit about what he brings to the team, and then talk about if there's really room for him at the end of this, because I think that is a very difficult question to answer. He's not a guy who wows you physically or has good size at all. He has arms under 32 inches. He weighs only 282 pounds, or that's at least where he was tested at I think it was at the combine, but it might have been at his pro day. Those kind of limitations at three tech are very difficult to overcome. He's a penetrator. He's not a, if I would describe him in the terms I currently use, I'd say he's a shed then chase player as opposed to a stack then shed player. He's really a guy who likes to get rid of his block at the line of scrimmage, likes to beat him outside, and likes to penetrate into the backfield. But those size limitations are very real in the NFL, and the Ravens had a lot of trouble getting him on the field in any kind of situation. He played a fair amount during those first 5 weeks, but after week five, he's only active for one game and played four defensive snaps. So there wasn't a spot for him, as it turned out.
He's got to get better. I mean, but he's a min-max kind of player, except you wonder how max the max is. I was impressed in the scouting process leading up to the draft by his quickness. And so he is one of those one trait players, mm-hmm, that you say to yourself, how do I use that trait to put him in the best position that he can be in on the football field? And it didn't quite work out.
I think that's very well put, by the way. And you see it in the very extreme usage of him. They really couldn't afford to have him on the field on run plays at all. He ends up, mm-hmm, playing 55 of 71 snaps on pass plays. That's about as extreme as it gets, folks. I mean, I don't think you'll find many, if any, edge players, situational pass rushers who come in who have any more extreme a split of run and pass than that. So they knew what they had to do with him. And one of the kind of the misfortunes for him is this team wasn't good enough. The 25 Ravens weren't good enough to build up the kind of leads that they had a lot of earlier in the Jackson era, such that they could have a closer like Peebles on the field to help rush the passer down after down late, which I think he'd have been very effective at.
That's a very good point. I mean, he's somebody that I could imagine on like the old Colts teams for example, with Peyton Manning, and he had their defense was structured to have a lead. Mm-hmm. That's where you want to be able to see him. I do not expect him to be on rundowns moving forward at any point in his career. So he is a situational pass rusher. That is going to be his role if he's going to make it.
Yeah, with you entirely. You know, if I look back at the season, he really was one of the few defensive players who played particularly well against the Bills in week one. There weren't zero. There were a couple other guys who played pretty well in that game, but he tipped a pass in the game, and he was in there with a two or three pressures during that game. A very fine game. It was all downhill, basically, from that point. And it's not like he doesn't have traits that you can look at and say, boy, I'm really excited about it. He's a good hand fighter. Fairly polished technique as a pass rusher, particularly. That's really unusual, by the way, for an interior pass rusher to be as polished as he is coming out of school. I mean, he had, you know, really solid rip move, and he does things to get to the edge of a guard from that three tech spot that can be very effective. But on the other hand, that really leaves questions about how much upside there is once he gets to the NFL. So I look at, when I see a really polished player, and I don't know how you look at it during the scouting process, Jason, I think I'm concerned about remaining growth. I much prefer to see an unpolished player who can play well despite that lack of polish, or have a neutral level where polish isn't really a primary concern.
I think that depends on where in the draft you are. I'm not a fan of taking projects in round one,
but ooh, if it's what you said, so Emin Worry versus Starks, that's the central concern.
All right. Yeah. That's another discussion. You were right about Emin Worry, period. End of story. But if it day three, yeah, that's when you want to take, high traits players that are, unpolished. Somebody like, I don't know, there's a receiver this particular year, Jeff Caldwell, that was breaking all of the testing numbers and such like that. He wasn't even drafted, which surprised me, but he would be the kind of late round flyer, right? There was a player in this class that was reminiscent of Aeneas Peebles, Landon Robinson.
Yes, out of Navy.
I think he probably was a bit better prospect than Peebles coming into the draft, but he was drafted in the seventh round by, unfortunately, the Cincinnati Bengals. So it's a case by case basis. We have players like Geno Stone, for example, who you take him in round seven. And I don't want to rain on his parade, but he's kind of one of those better football players than athlete type people. Mm-hmm. And he's worked out for a seventh round pick. He was a hit, right? So
when you're at that point, see, that's the place where I can tolerate it. I'm fine taking guys that are polished, unpolished, whatever, in the seventh round. You want to take the guy you think has the best chance to work out. And sometimes you have access to a player who, maybe polished, maybe not. It's in those early rounds. It has to be a pretty significant concern with a 23-year-old player in particular. It's really a concern. A guy gets to be 24. The guy in this draft I don't like is super polished is Mesidor, because he'll be 25 when the season starts. He's had most of his wins have come from high level of polish occurring in these last couple of years, and that's a little scary to me.
It'll be an interesting follow, especially because he was also across the field from Reuben Bain on the same defense. So you not only have the age factor, you have the
context factor,
second option factor as well into that. But that's not something the Ravens are going to have to deal with. Chargers got him. So he will be Jim Harbaugh's issue. Coincidentally, the team that Mike Minter came from.
Yeah. And we'll see them this year. So they will get they will be seeing Mesidor if he remains healthy at that point.
Ultimately, I think Aeneas, there's going to be a roster battle between Aeneas Peebles and Rashawn Benny. I think one of those two is going to make the team and one is not.
Completely agree. So what are you, if you're the advocate for Aeneas Peebles right now, and or if you'd like to advocate for Rashawn Benny, and I'll advocate for Peebles, however you'd like to do it. What are the pros that make it more likely that Aeneas Peebles can beat out a player like Benny?
I'll advocate for Peebles.
Okay.
I think Peebles' best trait is better than Benny's best trait. That's how I would advocate for him. I do not have the knowledge about how good either of them would be on special teams, but that is a major factor into who makes the team and who doesn't, because they're going to be somewhere between the 48th and 53rd member of the team. Mm-hmm. But as far as snaps on defense, I can see Aeneas Peebles making plays with his quickness and pass rush plan that Benny won't.
Okay, good scheme fit for the Ravens, potentially a good usage fit if the Ravens go back to their level of dominance, and maybe he can play some of the closeout role that we'd hoped for him. I'll go the other way on Benny, and I'll say Benny's got his own set of problems, by the way. Benny's apparently has some attitude issues that have shown up. So I don't want to go down this path because I don't want to name a source on these things, but reportedly really does not like the interview process. Really, really does not like the interview process. And I don't mean necessarily just with teams, which that may have been a problem in White, dropped all the way to round 7, but with individual reporters, he really doesn't. And he sometimes reacts to that with some monosyllabic answers and some basically childishness that you hope wouldn't occur at the NFL level with somebody who's been given this kind of an opportunity. But hopefully he works with coaching well. He's bigger than Peebles, so I think from that perspective he's more likely to stand up on rundowns, which is going to be one of the big changes in usage. As it comes to special teams, either one of them, they're probably just going to be on the field goal kick team. So I don't think there's so much of a, they're not going to be 4-unit punt or kick coverage players. They won't be involved in that at all. So it's really a matter of, can they do the job on maybe possibly the kick blocking team, but definitely on the kick kicking side of the team. And
I would imagine Peebles might have some issues trying to block a kick. But.
Yeah, he's a little shorter. That's for certain. He's had some good success blocking passes. And so it can be a little surprising sometimes how somewhat shorter players can do that occasionally. They have a better sense for it, but
Peebles has that natural reaction time. And also, there's two ways that you can get to a pass. One is to jump up vertically, mm-hmm. and the other one is to get to the quarterback horizontally. And I guess
that's
the deal with Peebles.
Yeah, with you entirely. And he has certainly had some of both. I think with Peebles, there's an overlap with Matabike that he's even greater, that he has to overcome, because Matabike would be the normal guy to have in those pass rush situations. And it'd actually be pretty difficult to get Matabike and Peebles on the field together. They could, and that would mean you take off Travis Jones. Again, now we're talking about some sacred cows that we're not really, I don't think the Ravens would be considering taking off the field on obvious passing downs. That term, by the way, it may seem offensive to some people. It's a term commonly used in business with core tenets that you're not willing to give up on. Like the fact that we insure military people with orders going to war is a core tenet. We're not going to give up on if you're an insurance company. It's known as a sacred cow then. But in this case, when we're talking about an individual player, it's a player that is not going to lose his role likely in a specific type of defensive package.
Okay.
I think there are reasons why Benny is the better player. Benny has more sand in the hourglass, in addition to the size and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But he's got things to prove, and it's going to be one of the really interesting camp battles this summer is to see these two guys go at it. really not at each other, but at it on the same time. There'll be some probably some defensive line drills where they're each kind of getting rough with each other a little bit when one guy's got the pad and the other guy is taking his shots.
I think we talked about this with Jovan Gwynn, right? Benny is this new coaching staff's guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's their guy. He's from Michigan. We have heavy ties with Michigan. So he's going to be coming in with that advantage. And I think now that you come up, now that you mentioned it with Madubuike, if Madubuike starts the season on PUP, then that might be the best case scenario for Peebles to make the team.
That would allow room for both of them potentially. It also would open the door. And let's talk about the defensive line in general. They have four guys right now, I think, who are locks. They have one of their nose tackles is kind of in the outside looking in. We'll talk about that in a second. But the guys who are locks are Jenkins, who had a very fine year last year, and even at age 37 is in no danger of losing his job. Calais Campbell, the 39-year-old and or 40-year-old now, just love the fact that the Ravens defensive line has this kind of age on it. Then they have Travis Jones, who's their best player. And he's certainly going to make the team. And if Madubuike is healthy, he's in. He might not be. And, you know, Madubuike, he might not play at all. He might not play much. And he might not play well. All possibilities for Madubuike entering this season. And any one of them could help a player like Benny or Peebles hang around or even return possibly from the practice squad. Peebles is a player. I don't think it's a sure thing that he gets taken if the Ravens cut him. I think
that's
that
a good
happen.
Point. He may make the practice squad.
He might be back. So, you know, that would probably have to figure into their thinking. Whereas I think if Benny were cut to the practice squad, my initial thought is, of course, he gets taken. And then I say, but every other team probably had him black dotted already on their draft board based on how he fell to number 250. Maybe not. So, you know, it tends to be that a lot of players, they don't get taken even when you cut them. The Ravens are one of the exceptions to that. You know, they had a bunch of cuts. Was it last year? They had three guys taken. Basically, actually, I think it ended up being five, including guys during the season, with Lowry and Kane getting taken. But it was Braid, JAD, and there's one other. I think it's defensive lineman that got taken. The guy had been there for a couple of years, got taken during the 91. Nichols.
Oh,
maybe that's not the guy. I thought he got taken by Tennessee, and it was at the. At cut down time.
Blarg. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was the Ravens. See, this is all right. This is a nit that I have to pick. People who have this idea that the Ravens are not a good drafting team.
Yeah.
They are objectively a good drafting team. Because they consistently have players, they are at the top of teams whose players are taken by other teams,
and are still playing in the NFL after getting their start with the Ravens. Yeah,
but I think that has to do with expectations between having a Pro Bowler or something like that versus just having an NFL player that makes the league. That's probably where that comes from.
You're talking about like why people think that draft picks are lottery tickets in later rounds, that they think it's because you have to get a Pro Bowler then, as opposed to being happy getting a Geno Stone in round seven or a Chad Williams in round six or any number of guys.
Did I say Geno Stone or did I say Geno Smith earlier?
I think you said Geno Stone. I think
okay,
you said
good. Thanks.
I that's the way my mind interpreted anyway because
okay
it was right. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. The expectations have so much to do with it. What would you say is a good season? Okay, from Peebles. Good for someone like him who's struggling to make the roster spot. Good is he makes the team. That's the as Ray Lewis likes to say. That's the bottom line. Make the team, you're doing well.
Okay. I'm going to lay another layer in there here. Is that it, that does it for you? Did you have other things you want to see in terms of specifics or anything further? I've got a little bit more than that.
I mean, I'd like to see him see the field and actually be effective with pressures on third down. But they kind of go hand in hand, right? If you show that you can do that, then you will stay on the team.
Right.
So I guess they're one and the same for me.
Yeah.
So the ability for him to, he has to win with quickness and he has to win with leverage or slipperiness, if you will. So if he can snake his way through the offensive lines of the other team, particularly, I would say, in division against the offensive lines of Cleveland and Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, then that would be good to see. That would be good.
All right. Let me toss a good season out there. And this is where I go. He has a solid OTA camp and preseason. He's in the running with Benny for the final DL spot. And I'm not going to say whether he wins that or not at the 60th percentile, because I think it's incredibly close whether there's a 40% chance any of Peebles makes his team or not. I think that's right about the right thing. So 60th percentile, I just can't say. And he finds his way to the roster at some point, whether on the 53, and that would possibly be in place of the pup Matabike, or as an injury replacement after a practice squad stint. That's also another possibility. Plays a limited rotational role of approximately 15 snaps per game when active behind Matabike, with play quality at or near the league average in aggregate as a pass rusher. Don't care about his run defense. I don't think he should be out there. He maintains limited to no run responsibilities. Now, here's what I have to say about this. You can't hide from defensive playing time if you're a defensive lineman who's active for the game. The team only carries five defensive linemen, generally speaking. They rotate all of them, and they all see the field some number of snaps per game. Now, it might be 7 to 12 snaps at a really low number, and that was kind of like where Peebles was last year during his activations. I think about 12 on average, maybe 71 over six games. But you can't hide from playing time. You will get it. You will see the field some. There's not enough of a special teams responsibility there to do it. The Ravens have had very poor success, particularly in recent years, activating just four defensive linemen and suffering the consequences of that. In particular, this last year when they had to play a ton of defensive snaps early, it was a very poor idea. So they should have five guys, and your fifth guy will have to play some. Now, that's also an unfortunate thing if your fifth guy is as limited as a player like Peebles is, and doesn't really play the run much. So I think a good season, he makes his way to the roster somehow, either in the original season or he gets there by injury after the season starts, plays a little bit in terms of snaps per game when active is all I'm willing to do about it, and still is at or near the league average as a pass rusher. I think that would be a good season at this point for Aeneas Peebles.
I would agree with that.
All right.
Great season. Great season would be for him to, he would see an extensive amount of time on the field, not as a starter, but as a situational pass rusher, that will be plenty of opportunities to get on the field because the Ravens are in front and they have a pass defense that works. That allows them to get in front. And I would say something along the lines of 20% pass rush win rate, something along those lines. For a situational player, you would have a higher expectation of win rate because you will be put in more snaps in that situation. So somebody who might be able to convert that into 4 or 5 sacks, maybe 25 pressures, something along those lines. That would be very ideal for him.
That would certainly be extremely ideal. I'd come in probably a little bit lower than that, but that's okay. A great season for me outplays Benny for a spot on the 53. That's his first thing he does. And that's it. That's at the top 20%. I think that's about his chance to clearly do that, beat out Benny, despite the difference in tenure that we're talking about, the sand remaining in the hourglass, becomes a component of the Ravens' scheme and needs for rotational defensive tackles, part of pass rush packages on obvious passing situation and plus game scripts. And this is a case of Minter really buying into that, I think. Minter could well buy into who Aeneas Peebles is and what he gives them in such situations, sees the opportunity for it, keeps him around for that, and then finds some marginal usage for him otherwise on a series by series basis. Snaps are limited to approximately 20 per game, but with quality at or slightly above the league average. Again, I'm talking about as a pass rusher. Ravens find ways to utilize him more as the season progresses, and he remains part of their 2027 plans. I think obviously he'll be a third year player. If he makes the roster and plays at a reasonably good level, he's kind of already part of their 2027 plans. That said, he's always going to be kind of the run of the litter in terms of having to fight for his meal here and his spot on the roster. That's just the unfortunate situation with a player like Peebles. So hopefully he can take that, put it as a chip on his shoulder and start beating the hell out of offensive linemen this summer and win across the board. And we'll see him make some big plays this fall.
Okay. Yeah. I wish him luck.
Jason, absolutely great talking football with you as always. Really appreciate it. Want to say again, what a great job you did on the draft stuff. I know that's a lot of your interest in the game is on the draft side. Tell folks where they can talk to you online and where they might ask you a question about the draft or about football in general.
Sure. I am writing articles now for Russell Street Report. It is the slow time of the year, so anything that I put out between now and training camp would probably be along the lines of Ravens of the past or just op-ed pieces and nothing particularly analytical. But you will find, particularly during the season, I'll be putting out an article every week talking about the upcoming Ravens opponent, scouting the opponent and their trends and what that means for what the Ravens are going to do. Also, I am on the Russell Street Report board. I am the person who is doing the annual IR thread there, which is a comprehensive look across the league at who is playing and who is no longer playing. With a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek, sardonic approach to it.
All right.
And other than that, I am lurking different places on Twitterix as 25 Nuggets, which is actually the baseball name. That's my Orioles name. But I like it, so that's how you'll find me there.
All right. Very cool. Jason, really appreciate having you on. Hope you'll be joining us next year for draft content again. And I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to do a short sometime between now and then. But really appreciate you. Other folks, please use hashtag Film Study Mailbag. If you have questions, I'll get them to the appropriate show. Do a 1-minute video myself, 1 to 3-minute video, or otherwise maybe contact you about doing a short on those. Jason, sure. Thanks again for coming on.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.